Welcome back to the Catholic Bible Pod with Mon. We return again to our Song of Songs series. We are on episode 3, but chapter 2 of the Song of Songs. And again, I'm joined by Katie.
Hey!
And we're back for more fun. I hope you enjoyed last week's episode on chapter 1. If you didn't catch that, head on back. Also in the show notes, you'll find the PDF that we are working through, but it's just the text of the Song of Songs. We're using the NAB version from the USCCB. But yeah, we're just kind of like diving into this poetry book. It's not always what it seems, I guess, could be an easy way to say that, because the poetry of the time doesn't necessarily explain itself super well. So we are using the book Cantata of Love. We're using Francis de Sales. We're kind of following the church fathers into this beautiful text in order to kind of pull it apart and to understand it more. So here we are at chapter 2. I feel like we've made a lot of headway, but I guess we're only on chapter 2.
We're only at the beginning.
There's only 8 chapters. Yes. So what are we? We're getting in there.
One-fourth of the way through.
Yeah, there we go.
That's actually significant.
Okay.
One-fourth.
Okay, so Katie, look at chapter 2. Where do you want to dive in? What first sticks out to you? What's on your heart and your mind as we start here?
Well, the first thing that actually stuck out to me was this reminding me of a song that I used to listen to all the time that we're going to put in the show notes for you to listen to this week. And it's Dance With Me by Jesus Culture.
Yes.
And basically all the lyrics are pulling from this. Mm-hmm. And it's from the perspective of Jesus saying, come dance with me. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a really good way for us to start, like, really diving into the mindset of him as bridegroom and him, like, romanticizing us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and just really, like, meditate in that space.
I love it when a song can do that because it gives language and melody to something. It really is beautiful to put the Bible into. So I love when the Bible, when a song is written straight, like, from a Bible verse. Or, you know, this whole chapter really contributes to the song. I'm like, yes.
Yes.
Show me the whole thing because you're going to pull out things that I never noticed. So, yes, we'll put that in the show notes. That's awesome. Thanks for noticing that, Katie.
Yes.
Okay, let's do the text then. Verse 1. Actually, do you want to read it first?
Yeah, let's read it.
Do you want to read it? You go first.
Okay.
Wherever you want to stop, I'll jump in.
So, chapter 2. I am a flower of Sharon, lily of the valleys. Like a lily among thorns, so is my friend among women. Like an apple tree among the trees of the woods, so is my lover among men. In his shadow I delight to sit, and his fruit is sweet to my taste. He brought me to the banquet hall, and his glance at me signaled love. Strengthen me with raisin cakes, refresh me with apples, for I am sick with love. His left hand is under my head, and his right arm embraces me. I adjure you, daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles and the does of the field, do not awaken or stir up love until it is ready. The sound of my lover, here he comes, springing across the mountains, leaping across the hills. My lover is like a gazelle or a young stag.
See, he is standing behind our wall, gazing through the windows, peering through the lattices. My lover speaks and says to me, arise, my friend, my beautiful one, and come. For see, the winter is past, the rains are over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth. The time of pruning the vines has come, and the song of the turtle dove is heard in our land. The fig tree puts forth its figs, and the vines in bloom give forth fragrance. Arise, my friend, my beautiful one, and come. My dove in the clefts of the rock, in the secret recesses of the cliff, let me see your face. Let me hear your voice. For your voice is sweet, and your face is lovely. Catch us the little foxes, that damage the vineyards, for our vineyards are in bloom. My lover belongs to me, and I to him. He feeds among the lilies. Until the day grows cool and the shadows flee, roam, my lover, like a gazelle or a young stag upon the rugged mountains. Okay, that's it.
All right, so Monica, what sticks out to you?
Okay, I do love this chapter, I will say. I feel like we've got a lot to talk about.
Yes, I agree.
This one I feel like might be my favorite. I don't know. Am I too quick to say that?
I know. I go between 1 and 2. 1 and 2
okay,
are usually my
right?
favorite.
Yeah. They're just good. They're good. So, okay. So Father John Burns pointed this out in a podcast this year, and it has just not left me. I just verses 1 and 2 have taken on like new meaning for me. So I got to start with 1 and 2. I am a flower of Sharon, a lily of the valleys. So the first thing is the bride is saying this. She is saying, I'm a flower of Sharon, I'm a lily of the valleys. And he replies to her, like a lily among thorns, so is my friend among women. So she, it's like a, mostly in chapter 2, it's her talking. But here he goes, interrupting her, kind of replying, which I think is just sweet, by the way, that they're conversing, okay? But also she says, I'm a flower of Sharon. That might sound like she's like, I'm a flower, I'm beautiful. She's actually saying the opposite. She's saying, I am like every other flower. A flower of Sharon is very common. A lily of the valleys. There are millions of lilies in the valleys. She's like, I am just like anybody else you find on the street. I'm nobody. Don't pick me. You know, she's going back to chapter 1 where she's like, I'm sunburned. Don't look at me. You know, she's kind of putting herself down. And I don't think she's doing it in false humility. I mean, like, I don't know. But I'm seeing this and I'm like, yeah, she's discovering her unworthiness to be chosen. And he replies immediately to remedy her identity problem. He says, no, that's not how I think of you. He says, like a lily among thorns. If you see, if you can visualize in your mind's eye, a thorn bush, but one lily sticks out, it's like that lily is extraordinary. That lily is like nothing else around it. Mm-hmm. That lily is amazing, right? And so he's like, no, you're not one of a million. You are the only one. So it's romantic and sweet in a way that it doesn't appear, like it doesn't stick out of the text like that. I don't know. And I actually want to read from Isaiah 62. Let me flip to it real quick. It's going to be worth it, I promise. But Isaiah 62, 4 kind of has the same echo of this like delight. I don't know. This is Isaiah writing, but from God to man. And he says, you shall no longer be termed forsaken. Your land shall no longer be termed desolate. You shall be called, my delight is in her, and your land married. For the Lord delights in you, and your land shall be married. For as a young man marries a virgin, your sons marry you. And as a bridegroom rejoices over the bride, so shall God rejoice over you. And I don't know, to put these two verses kind of together, where she's like, I'm nothing. And he's like, you are everything. And it's like, my delight is in you, to hear these words from God. I don't know. It's just, it like, I can't handle it for very long before I'm like, oh my gosh, what? Like, it's just, it's really moving.
Yeah. I think what stuck out was when it says he delights in you. Because how often do we actually think that God delights in us?
Yeah.
We're usually thinking of like, here's the 5,000 ways that I've sinned.
Yeah.
Or when I think about the great saints, they also have this perspective of like, I'm the worst of the sinners.
I know. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
But that's not actually, that's a good point, because that's not actually a thing that the church tells us to imitate in them.
Yeah.
That's like usually of the time period that it was common. Like St. Teresa of Avila writes very self-deprecatingly.
Or St. Francis sometimes can be hard for me to read.
Sure.
The different like things that he would do to himself.
Oh my gosh, like to punish himself?
To punish himself because of how terrible of a... Or he would say, I'm a worm.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I feel almost uncomfortable.
Yeah, you're like, wait, should I say, no, Francis, you're not. Or should I say, oh my gosh, I am too. Like, what should be my response? But as far as I know, the church doesn't say, agree with every single thing a saint says because they're a saint. So if Francis says he's a worm, that's the part we really like about Francis. You know, that might not be the church's... It's just like, in general, the saint was amazing. Not necessarily that the specific beliefs they had about, you know, it might be that Francis shouldn't have said that, or maybe he should have at the time period. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
But I think that's very interesting, that maybe it's a little bit of a call on for us too, that back then, whenever, there was a little bit more like, I know that I'm so weak.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe we've talked about this before on the pod, maybe not, but this whole idea, I feel like I've talked about this with you, this whole idea of like, you're amazing. You're so awesome. You're the best. You can do it.
Yeah.
That's like us trying to encourage one another, but it's actually not very biblical.
Yes.
And it's not like what the Lord says to us. He doesn't say, you're amazing, so you can do it. He says, I'm God and I am with you, so you can do it. So we have this like mini heresy these days of how great we are.
Yes.
You know, not that we're worms. We're God's beloved. Yeah. Somewhere in between amazing and worms.
I know. And I think sometimes maybe it can be easier to relate to the worms because we can just see how, like, we're failing. Because our failures can be so apparent to us.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's either we can just, like, give into that and be like, I need to do all these things to earn his love, oh, which yeah. God's clearly not saying here. He's like, no, you're a lily among thorns. Like, I delight in you.
Right.
I rejoice in you. And but then I think, or we can be like, we're uncomfortable with seeing ourselves as a failure. So we're just going to like go the whole other direction and be like, I'm amazing.
Yeah.
I'm a boss babe. Yes. I can do anything.
Like nothing's wrong with me. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. To like live in that, like, okay, I'm not perfect. God delights in me. And I'm going to keep trusting that he knows what he's doing.
Yes. And keep trusting that he is fully aware.
Yes.
Of who I am. While he's saying this, he's not deceived looking at me like thinking I'm better than I am. He is fully aware of who I am, and he still says, my delight is in you.
Yes.
You know, like, we can't hide our sinfulness from him.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm edified by that.
Yes. Yeah, and as we keep going, the next verse, like an apple tree, when she compares him to an apple tree, that stood out to me because it's the bearer of fruit. Apple tree is a bearer of fruit in life. It's not just a living thing, but it's also bearing fruit.
Oh, yeah, sure. Totally. Apples.
Yeah, which is, like, amazing because he's saying, I'm not just going to give you life. I'm going to, like, give you fruit, too.
Okay, that's awesome.
I'm going to feed you.
Okay, because you're saying that this is what the... Who is speaking here?
This is the bride, and she's saying to the groom.
Oh, because, like, an apple
you
tree.
You are an apple tree.
Yes. Okay, that's what I thought.
Yes.
That's what I thought. Yeah, Father John Burns also points out that an apple tree is actually a foreign plant to them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so we, I mean, again, in, you know, Ohio, we're like, apple tree. There's apple trees everywhere, right? That's common, but they're like, an apple tree, amazing!
Yeah.
Like, yeah, so it's like more of a compliment. Okay, wait, so talk more about bearing fruit, though. She's saying that he gives her fruit?
He gives her fruit.
Yeah, yeah.
And then because, well, then what's crazy is because he gives her fruit, we'll see later she's able to bear fruit. Because nothing we ever have is of our own.
Yeah.
But he has everything that we need. And then because he has everything that we need, it says, in his shadow, I delight to sit, and his fruit is sweet to my taste.
Okay, yeah, the shadow is cool. Okay, keep going. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's this idea of when we rest in him, we receive his fruit. And it's not by what we're doing, because we're sitting. So we're sitting with him.
We're not earning it.
We're not earning anything.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, it's that beauty of contemplative prayer, which the church teaches that we can't actually do contemplative prayer without his grace.
Yeah. Wow. Yep.
It's all a gift.
And I just love, too, the fruit. It makes me think of the fruits of the Holy Spirit. Like,
yes.
You know, joy, peace, patience. I don't know. The rest of them, gentleness.
Yes.
Self-control. But, like, the idea that joy, you know, we talk about joy. Joy is a choice. Yes, we can choose joy. We can choose to be joy-filled. But also, joy is a fruit that we receive from spending time with him.
Yeah.
It's like comes to us. We are filled with joy because it's a gift. It's a fruit. It's something that comes from, the source is him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool to think
about. I know.
About.
I think of Mother Teresa with that, of like all the things that, like all the suffering she saw in her life. And she just had like this joy when she was around people. And it's like, I don't think she was actually, like, mustering up joy.
Yeah, she wasn't necessarily.
I think she was just, like, in joy. She was just living in the joy of Christ.
Yeah.
And so that just made me think a lot about, like, do I give time to just sit? And it's still the same thing. Yeah, it was just something I didn't learn for a while of, like, you can't. I always thought I could just contemplate.
Like, I'll just go contemplate right now. I'm gonna do it.
Like, I thought contemplating was just like sitting with your Bible and
kind of thinking.
Thinking. Yeah.
I mean, me too, honestly. I'm like, I'm contemplating right
and
now.
And then I'm like, oh, okay. Do I give space in my prayer, like maybe even at the end of it, to just like sit and just receive? Like, maybe it's gonna be silence a lot, but sometimes maybe it's not.
Maybe
it is just gonna be a fruit of like 1 minute of just like feeling at peace.
I really love that, too, because the shade, sitting in the shade, is going to be the opposite of what we see him ask her to do later, which is, like, catch the foxes in the vineyard. You know, there's going to be actions, too, in love. But the first thing is sit in shade. Like, it's both. We can both labor with the Lord and work for, and there's a time and a place for that.
Yes.
and kind of like the work of prayer, you know, if you will, like the, I'm going to journal, I'm going to kind of process, I'm going to get this thoughts out, I'm going to work to be in relationship with you and talk to you. But then there's also just the resting of, I'm here with you. Yeah. It's cool. There's also, I guess the imagery throughout the Bible of the shadow is like protection under the shadow of his wings, safety. We see this in Psalms, Hosea. So it's like, it's rest and it's also like safety.
Yeah, we're safe there.
You're safe enough to close your eyes and contemplate and be with him.
Yeah, so. And surrender yourself, really.
I also love in his shadow, I delight to sit. It makes me think of overshadow. So there's this word overshadow that appears 2 times in scripture, maybe more. But during Mary's Annunciation, she says, you know, how will this happen to me? How am I going to conceive? And Angel Gabriel says, the Holy Spirit will overshadow you. And that same word overshadow is used in Exodus when Moses is talking about the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark is overshadowed by the glory cloud. Mm. So the presence of God comes upon it and it's filled and transformed, right? When the Holy Spirit overshadows Mary, when she sits in the shadow of the Holy Spirit, she literally bears Jesus inside her womb. You know, like, if we can think about that concept, that I come to prayer and I ask God to overshadow me, which is, in essence, to let him have complete access to me.
Yeah.
It's not just I'm sitting in your shade. It's like letting that shade get in me, you know?
I know. Well, that's something that's so, like amazing about this chapter is she's letting herself be won over by his love.
Wait, say more about that.
Because you see her, like, at the, right here, she says, "For I'm sick with love."
Yes.
So she's actually so wounded by his love.
Yes.
That she's like, it's almost that balance of, like, the here but not yet that we feel. Of, like, oh, I just love you. And I'm, like, surrendering myself completely to you. But I'm still not really fully with you. Like,
interesting.
There's still more.
Because of heaven?
Because of heaven.
Yeah.
There's always going to be this just tension of we're never going to have the fullness of him until we are completely perfect in heaven when we can actually receive the fullness of him.
Yeah. It's like Teresa's ecstasy stab. Her heart is pierced. Her heart is hurt.
Yeah.
Longing for him. Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. It makes me think, too, of the stigmata in a different way, because the stigmata is hurt. You are hurt. And that, this word here is sick. But, like, I don't know. The other day on Instagram, I stumbled across a video of somebody who's Christian, not Catholic, who had stumbled upon the idea of redemptive suffering and stigmata. Yeah. And they were kind of like, Catholics, what are you talking about? What is happening? Why would you ever condone this? And somebody was responding in a really reasonable way. And I was like, oh, good job responding, you know? But I was like, huh, it is kind of interesting. If you've never heard of this, and Catholics are like, yeah, on the feast days, the stigmata would bleed. Isn't that awesome? And you're like, what? This is not awesome. This is so freaky. But it's like, for us, for Jesus, for the church, for suffering and love are tied up so tightly. They're like, so I'm sick with love is not even a negative thing. It's just a reality.
Yeah.
That when she is in love, it's causing her pain. It's causing her wound.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. Stigmata is sickness, love sickness.
Yes. Well, even think in an earthly way, like, I remember whenever, like, I was engaged and we'd, like, say goodbye at the end. And, like, my heart would, like, hurt.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm going to see them, like, in a couple of days. Not them, him, in a couple of days.
All of my fiancés.
All of them. But it's like, if I feel that for, like, an earthly person of, like, oh, but I, like, want to not say. I remember, like, thinking that, like, I just don't want to say goodbye.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, yeah, with the Lord, it's like, there are these, like, almost goodbye moments in the day of, like, okay, I have to leave prayer. And he is with me, but it's different.
Yep.
Because he's not. It's like, my earthly reality can't fully comprehend the heavenly reality.
Yeah, right.
Maybe one day.
Let's go.
They will mesh. One day, hopefully in heaven, they will for sure mesh. But yeah, it's like, I was just wrestling with, like, do I let myself sit in being lovesick for Jesus? I think that was a lot of this chapter. Like, I feel like a lot of this is training myself to actually sit in a uncomfortable place of not really doing anything and just letting Jesus have space.
Wow.
And it's really not about me, like, doing something new as more of just like sitting and letting the space exist.
Yeah, yeah.
And just seeing what he does with that.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, yeah. It's just like war on productivity.
Yes.
Because when we're productive in our prayer, we feel really edified because we know that we did it right.
Yeah.
But when we are just in love with him, sometimes it doesn't call for any action. And that's really not the point. He's almost like ridding us of productive prayer in order to just be with him.
Yes.
It's like taking you further up and further into something that's not as familiar. Because I do think beginner prayer, the productiveness, and mm-hmm. I say productiveness meaning like, I wrote something really inspiring in my journal.
Yes.
I felt God's presence. You know, that's good.
Yes.
It's good. It's holy. It's beautiful. But it's like that when that is removed and God says, will you hurt for me and just be here?
Yeah.
I also think of, I don't know, I'm going on a different train of thought here, but I'm thinking about the Beatitudes mm-hmm. again. I don't know. When we talk, I just get these new ideas. I'm like, oh my gosh, the Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor. Blessed yeah. are the sick. Blessed are the suffering. I don't think the sick is one of them. Blessed are the suffering. Whatever.
The
sad. Right. The yeah. poor. Whatever. All these bad things. And it's like, they are sick with love.
Yeah.
They are happy. Blessed means happy. They're happy because it doesn't matter. The suffering and the love are intertwined. I don't know. I just think.
Yeah.
I don't know, I'm thinking about you sitting there feeling sad, the sadness of I want to be with you, Jesus, but I'm not with you yet, and letting that, mm-hmm. like, blessed are you, Katie, for that, because you will have Jesus. You know, I just think it's connected. I think he's...
That's really good.
Interesting. Good messaging.
Yeah. Which I think is the difference between, like, sitting with, like, Jesus as teacher. Because sometimes Jesus is like, okay, I'm going to be your teacher during prayer today.
We're taking notes.
Yeah, we're taking notes. We're, like, learning new parts of the Bible.
Yep.
Or, like, Jesus being bridegroom.
Yeah, right, time. Right.
And there's not a wrong way for Jesus to show up
right.
in your prayer. But right now, I think doing this study specifically, I'm like, okay, I think this is a season for me to actually, like, dive in to Jesus's bridegroom more and kind of put away my other things that I feel like I should be doing.
Yeah, well.
And make intentional space to just be still and just let it be what it is.
Yeah, that's so good. I'm really like letting that one knock around because I'm like, oh gosh, that calls me on.
It's so uncomfortable.
Yeah. And I feel like that's the word God gave me for, like, this season, this year right now, is, like, return, fall in love, be back. And I was like, oh, no. It just feels silly. I don't need that. I've got stuff to do. For you, by the way, Lord. Like, do you see your kingdoms in crisis down here? I'm fixing it. You know, like, no. Like, I'm putting myself in the driver's seat to even drive my relationship with God, you know? And there's goodness and goodness to my personality that's like, let's get things done, and goodness to, like, strategy and stuff. But, like... In the end, I don't know. Jesus could have, you know, made us anyway, and he chose to make us bride. You know? He could have made us construction worker people. No offense, construction workers listening to this. But, you know, like, he didn't relate to us that way.
Yes.
I don't know. Anyways, I digress on my point here. I think I'm just talking myself into this. Okay, let's go to verse 4. Look how far we are. Verse 4.
But I know, we jumped. We jumped down, and then we'll go back up.
Okay, good.
But you should talk about verse 4, because I think we've missed some things.
Okay,
there.
Wait. I just want to talk about the banquet hall. If you have anything about the raisin cakes, I mean, I would love to know any here of your thoughts about raisin cakes.
I actually don't.
I just think that is so funny. Raisin cakes. Mm-hmm. I'm like, really? Raisins are nasty. So what are you even talking about? They're probably, like, really delicious to them. Okay, banquet hall. This is just, like, Psalm 23. I eat in the presence of my enemies, you know? And, like, Jesus eats with sinners. He goes to their houses. He brought me to the banquet hall.
Mm-hmm.
And when Jesus is with people in a banquet hall at a table, people feel free to speak with him and eat with them. He welcomes them. But a banquet hall is not the same thing as a bedroom. And so he starts here. He brought me to the banquet hall.
Yeah.
His glance signaled me with love. He gave me food, right? But then eventually we're going to progress into, like, more of their togetherness in the marriage. So I don't know. I just think it's cool. I don't know. A wedding feast, if you will.
Yeah.
Thought that was cool.
And then the verse underneath it, and his glance at me signaled love. Another translation is, his banner over me is love.
Oh, yes. That's and more common.
Yes. And this is one that I have, like, sat with for a long time. And I think the biggest thing that strikes me, and this is actually a quote from Cantata of Love, is God does not conquer our hearts except through the excess of love. So he only pursues us in love. His army against us is love. So he's not, like, a God of manipulation. He's not a God trying to get something from us. He only wants to woo us with his love. Like, that's his only weapon that he has.
Wow.
Is like, I'm just going to keep loving you.
Wow.
And loving you and loving you and loving you. And hoping that, like, one day by my grace that your, like, your heart of stone will be turned to flesh.
Wow.
And, like, that's, like, the most beautiful thing to, like...
Ugh. It's crazy because it's the image of warfare, too.
Yeah.
It kind of makes me wonder, why warfare? Like, if my fiancé came to me with, like... Sorry, my husband.
Yeah.
When he was my boyfriend, came to me and said, I will fight until you say yes.
Yes, I know.
I'd be like, what? Like,
I will
break up with you. Exactly. Like, but it is, I don't know, I've had this image before, and I'm sure this is from a bunch of different places, but like that God is fights within us, even the lies, the doubts, the places that the devil has gotten foothold. There is spiritual battle happening within us.
Yeah.
That he fights within us. So it's like he comes in warfare, decked out for warfare, not against us, mm-hmm. but against anything that would get in our way of him. You know, he fights with violence any idols, any enemies. You see him in Exodus doing like warfare over the false gods and idols that have pulled his people away from him.
Yeah.
But his banner over them is love. But his banner over their enemies is destruction. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, there is a destructive, like, vengeful, not vengeful, but, like, I will do not mess with God, you know?
Yes.
But, like, I just think the warfare imagery is not directed at us. God's not attacking us. I don't know. I just think that's interesting that it's warfare, but it's not really warfare
for us. It's not, yeah.
His banner over us is love.
Yeah. It's more of, like, a war that he's fighting against the evil.
Yeah.
And he's like, you will not have... them. But at the end of the day, he also knows it's our choice.
Yeah.
Which is crazy that he gave us this freedom of choice.
Yeah, we can choose.
And he's like, I'm gonna fight this battle for you. But at the end of the day, he doesn't even have power over which side we choose.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, our God is just like incredible.
It's like
that
I'll,
he gives
I'll
us that much freedom.
Just for the chance that you'll say yes to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, oh my gosh. I'm going to put another song in the show notes, Defender by Rita Springer. I just feel like that's not maybe necessarily chapter two of Song of Songs, but what we're talking about
yes.
is just like, oh my gosh, it's just beautiful. Oh,
yes.
Okay, I love it. Okay, where are we? Verse 6 His left hand under me. Anything there for you?
Yes.
Talk to me.
I think it's so sweet. So Cantata of Love was talking about how his left hand under my head is actually like a mother with her infant.
Oh,
so
what?
I think yes, which I think a lot about because it'll go like forth and talk about her as like daughter.
Okay.
And we are obviously his daughter, but then it says his right arm embraces me, mm-hmm. which is that of a groom.
Oh, wow.
So my daughter, my bride.
Wow.
So he's just like, here, just rest with me and I'm going to embrace you.
Wow.
And just be so tender with you. Like, right after he's like, I'm going to fight for you with love. He's like, oh, just come close.
Yeah.
And rest. Because he knows that she's so sick with love.
Yeah.
That she can't do anything else.
Yeah.
And so he's like, okay, I'll just
embrace.
Hold you.
Yeah, I'll hold. And
yeah.
I mean, it's true. God compares himself, even if it's like, oh my gosh, mother. God compares himself to mother.
Yeah.
Throughout scripture. You know, I will comfort you as a mother. Even if a mother forgets, how could a nursing mother forget her child? Yeah, I'll remember you. You're graven on my hands. That type of, he uses this imagery. So I don't know. As a mother, I'm like, wow, this is really special. We get a participation in like God's nature that,
yeah,
that men don't get or that non-mothers don't get because of, I don't know, the children aspect. I don't know. Maybe the whole parental area of God, but
yeah.
That's cool. The left hand under my head next time I'm holding my baby, I'll have to make sure I put her on my left hand.
Left hand, yes.
No right hand.
Must be in the left hand.
Okay, verse 7, I really like. It's debated who says this, right? Mm-hmm. Here in the NAB version, I think it's still under the bride says this, but I have a, Cantata says the bridegroom says this.
Yeah, in my
I like
Bible,
that better.
Well, I think the bridegroom
says okay, it. Yeah. And I like it because he repeats it multiple times.
Yes.
But maybe this is the first time, maybe he already said it once, but do not waken or stir up love until it's ready. This is the point you made earlier in the first episode about he is so patient because she sincerely does try to love him. But it's like Peter before he was betrayed, like, I will die for you, Lord.
Yes.
He's not making that up. He means it. But when the moment comes to actually do it, Peter fails.
Mm-hmm.
So the bride says it. Like, I love you. Let me kisses with the kisses of my mouth. She loves him. But then the moment comes for her to like let him in and she fails to do it. So she betrays him in the same way, you know, Peter betrays him. She falls asleep, mm-hmm. just like Peter falls asleep. But he is patient. He's like, it's okay. Do not awaken or stir up love until it's ready. He's not like banging down her, you know, like, it's time. You have to love me now. You said you love me. So I don't know, just the dance of our life sometimes when we're like, I love you. Oh my gosh, how could I have sinned? I said I love him. It's like, yeah, both are true. I love you and I love you clumsily and I stumble on my way. Yeah.
Yeah. So. He doesn't hasten us.
Yeah, that's good. He just
lets us be.
Mm.
He's like, okay, we're just going to wake up tomorrow and we're going to start a new day. And that's kind of what we see is like, when you see it, yeah, when you see it as like the bridegroom saying that, and then we go back into the bride and she's like, the sound of my lover, here he comes.
Mm.
So that means that when she woke up, he wasn't there.
Right.
And he's like, oh, he's not holding me anymore. But look, here he comes.
Wow. Okay.
Like, he's still coming to me. And he's like, not as stagnant because he's like springing across the mountains, leaping across the hills.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't know. I think that's interesting that she falls asleep with him, but then
she wakes up without him.
And he's like on the mountains.
Yeah, right. He's like, where'd you go? Oh, wait, you're out there getting coffee.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no. You're on the mountains. Okay, wait. And then here he comes. I love that line. Here he comes.
Yes.
It's like, oh, relief.
Yes.
You know, he's not here. You know, the moment you wake up, you're like, where did he go? Oh, he's coming.
Yes.
And somewhere in here, I have a little note. The prophetic books, the whole Old Testament is summed up there. If you wanted three words to sum up the Old Testament, here he comes.
It's like,
there he comes, leaping across generations to get to me. Like, he's coming, he's coming. And then here he is on Christmas. Like,
yes.
I don't know. I'm just like, woo! Like, Advent!
That is awesome.
Okay, but do you have anything to say about this, the fact that the gazelle, stag, leaping, springing?
I don't.
Neither do I. I just thought that's so interesting. Again, probably we're going to attribute it to just Hebrew poetry.
Yes.
That is not a joke.
No, it's definitely not a joke.
If I picture my husband leaping across mountains like a stag, like he'd be like, really? No, but it's like, yeah, okay, cool. I don't mean to mock this. It's an acquired taste, right?
Yes.
Okay, but look definitely. At this. Look at this here. He's leaping. He's active. He's moving. And then, whoop, he's waiting.
Yes.
Okay, he's standing behind our wall, gazing through the windows, peering through the lattices. So a moment ago, he was running towards her.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's here, and he's not bursting open the door. He's not quite here. He's here at the door, and he's waiting. He runs, and then he waits. That's the point you just made, and I just want to make it in a different way. Like, here comes Jesus, conquering everything to come to us. But then he waits for us to open. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, his patience. Yeah.
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 Yeah, that makes me think about, because he just had this, like, this very powerful encounter. Like, she had this very powerful encounter with her bridegroom.
Yeah.
Where she's literally she's sick with love.
Yeah.
She falls asleep because she's just so overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so, like, I feel like that's, like, I just went on a retreat.
Oh, sure.
And I had this huge encounter. And then I get home, and I wake up the next day. And I'm like, oh,
Where is he? Oh, he's coming.
Oh, he's coming.
Okay.
And then I'm like, oh, wait, but why isn't he like, why am I not having this lovesick
encounter? Yeah, why don't I feel him anymore? Yeah.
But it's almost like Jesus doesn't take our permission from yesterday for today.
Okay, interesting.
So like maybe at that retreat or whatever that powerful experience was, we were in that moment very surrendered to him.
Mm.
But the next day, he's not going to approach us the same way if in our heart posture, we actually aren't there.
Wow.
So he's like, okay, I'm going to wait here until you invite me in again.
It makes me think of daily bread. Like,
yeah.
He doesn't give you everything you need for the week.
Yes.
He gives you everything you need for today.
For the day.
Because he's going to meet you every day to give it to you.
Yeah.
Mm.
And it's going to look different every day because we're human and we're going to have different capacities for God each day mostly because of our sinfulness.
Sure.
And the different attachments we might have.
Sure.
For a certain day. But yeah.
Even just our body, our physical health.
Our physical health.
If we're well, if we're sick, if we're sleep deprived.
I mean, ideally, it would be the same capacity every day.
That's probably true. Yes.
But we just know that it's not.
Yeah.
But yeah, he doesn't just like assume that he can come in the same way.
Yeah.
Which I think is very... Yeah, that waiting.
It's tentative. It's sensitive. It's Yeah, it's very about the bride,
Yeah.
not about him. It's
Yeah.
like he sees her where she's at and invites her. And that's honestly the words here, arise, my friend, my beautiful one, and come. This is an invitation, not an order. It makes
Yes.
me think of Ella Enchanted. She has to obey orders. And
Yeah.
so in the book by Cale Carson Levine, there's a moment where he's like, oh wait, I just thought lost my train of thought. He tells her to marry him or something like that, and she has to. But then he was like, he walks it back because he knows that she has to obey. And he's like, no, it's not a only if you want to. I don't remember what he
Yeah.
was saying, but like she has to obey. He's not ordering her to do anything. He is inviting her. Arise, come, like come back to me. Come, I came for you. I don't know. But wait,
Yes.
backtracking just for 1 second, because the peeking through the lattices thing, I just really like this. Francis de Sales, good old Franny, he likes to he set up a bunch of different ways in Introduction to the Devout Life for you to like get into the presence of God at the very beginning of your prayer time. So like those first 5 minutes that you're settling down, sitting down, trying to call to mind the presence of God. He says this is a place that he likes to go, is imagining God peering through the lattices at him, saying, hey, come. Like
Yeah.
that's a way that he approaches the first 5 minutes of his prayer. I just think that's really
Aww.
sweet to say, I don't know, in the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen. Close my eyes and to picture Jesus like peeking through the lattice. He's already there. He's already
Yeah.
interested in me. He wants to talk to me. And he's like, come here. And it's not so much that I'm like, where are you? It's that he's already come to me. So I don't know. I think
Yeah.
that's cool.
Aww, that's really
But
sweet.
anyways, back to my beautiful one, arise and
Yes.
come. What are your thoughts here, Katie?
Yeah, the biggest thing I think with this whole like down to like 14, so
Okay,
like
yep.
10 to 14, is this huge invitation. Like first it's the invitation, my beautiful one, come. And then he talks about our land. So he's
Yep.
saying like we're in this together. Like I give you dominion over this too. Then he's like, arise, my friend, my beautiful one, and come. He says it again. And then what I think is interesting is I think it kind of reveals the maybe the mindset of what he's kind of getting from the bride, because he says, let me see your face, let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. So it's kind of, he went from this invitation to like come, 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 now he's like, don't hide, like you don't need to hide from me. And so then I'm like, oh, maybe that's where the bride is right now. She's like, we had this thing yesterday that was so beautiful, but I'm still not worthy. And so he's like, you can come to me, you can come to me. And she's like, I don't know.
And then he like coaxes her out.
Yes.
Let me see your face. Let me hear your voice. Like he's like speaking more and more
Yeah.
words of love to her. I love this. Every time it says secret in this book, I'm like, ooh, ears up. Like, look at secret, because
Yeah.
the secret place, the secret recesses of the cliff. Like, I think that like the garden closed, like all of this imagery of secrecy is about intimacy. And about
Yeah.
inviting her to a place that's only for her and him. Like they're the only two people in the world. So I don't know, the secret recesses of the cliff. This is not me, this is church fathers, this is cantata probably, but the clefts of the rock and the secret recesses of the cliff draw to mind this event in Exodus 33, where Moses says to God, he kind of has the cry of the bride here. He's like, let me see you. And actually that I guess that's the cry of the bridegroom to the bride the next moment, which makes you think that God was thinking of Moses when he's talking here. Anyways,
Yeah.
but the bridegroom, the bride wants to be with him, wants to know him, wants to see him. Moses says, let me see your glory. And he also says, like, I don't want to go where you're not going. If your presence is not going, I don't want to go there. So God is really pleased by this request of Moses. He likes the fact that Moses wants to be with him. So he says, I will hide you in the cleft of this rock, and I'll put my hand over you, and I will walk by you, and you can just see the back side of me as I pass by, because you can't handle seeing my full glory. But it's like the clefts of the rock, that little line makes you think of Moses looking for God's glory and God trying to show him as much as he can possibly handle, you know, and he's
Yeah.
calling the bride, my dove, in the clefts of the rock, like in the secret place where I can show you little pieces of myself. I don't know. There's like this intimacy
Yeah.
piece there.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
It's interesting because I wouldn't think of Moses as a particularly like romantic bridal guy, but he's the
Yes. I mean, yeah, he had intimacy with
He
God.
totally did.
Yeah, it says that in Exodus a couple times.
Yeah, he was, and his face glowed
Yeah.
from encountering God. Yeah. But it's hard. You characterize him as a certain type of guy, and he's got intimacy with the Lord, really deep. Yeah, even if he didn't get to go into the Promised Land, sad. Francis de Sales also says that you can go through his wounds and through his pierced side into his heart, and if Jesus is the rock, like his cracks open up, like in this in his side, the wounds, the cracks open up, and we can access his heart through it. So he is the rock, and the clefts of the rock, the openings, that's how we access. Francis de Sales talks about like having a resting place inside the wounds of Jesus. I'm like, what does that mean? Like visually, I'm like in a sleeping bag, like in the wound of Jesus, like zipping it up. Like, what is this supposed to be, cozy? But like just resting in there at a place where nobody else is, like lying on his heart inside his wounds. I wouldn't necessarily put that imagery with a rock, but that is the imagery the church fathers are putting together. Like the rock is Jesus, and the clefts of the, I don't know, access points to him are his wounds and the suffering that he endured. I don't know. Anyways, I digress again.
Redemptive suffering.
It's easy to just talk in circles in this poem, isn't it? He was like, la 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 la.
This one has, I just feel like this chapter has so much,
It's rich.
so
It's really
much in it.
rich. Okay, but let's get to the part that we both love. Verse
Yes.
15.
Catches the foxes, the little fox. I think I've heard
Foxes!
so many sermons. Like on this. I think I got into like a Protestant sermon kick of
There you
like, and they
go.
were just like, this was their verse at the
Okay, there
time.
you go.
But I was thinking a lot of like, this is what we're doing for Lent right now,
Interesting.
is we're trying to catch
Catch
the foxes
foxes.
in our vineyard. Like whatever we chose for Lent to like give up or sacrifice and stuff. It's
Yes.
like because we're trying to attack a fox that is in our vineyard.
And the vineyard is the place that me and Jesus meet, and we grow together. And so the foxes are
Habitual sins,
distractions,
distractions,
idols,
TV,
yeah,
your iPhone. I'm just
my
kidding.
phone, yeah,
Well,
exactly.
I don't know. There probably is some truth to that.
Yeah, no,
At least for
seriously.
me.
At least for me, sweets. Yeah.
But I wanted to read from Cantata of Love what Saint Francis de Sales says. He said, "They are little foxes, but do not let them grow." So I think he's just commenting on how it's like catches the foxes, the little foxes. So like the things that we think like, it's probably not that big a deal. I can probably just keep that in my life, even though the Lord's kind of convicting me to maybe go a different path. It's probably
fine.
fine. It's fine for other people.
Nobody else ever does that besides you and me,
Nobody
Katie.
else. But he says they are little foxes, but do not let them grow, because if you wait, when you want to catch them, they will have already have spoiled everything. And that's just a really good call on, I think, to be like, okay, whenever the Lord convicts us of something, let's just pay attention.
Yeah.
Especially when it's something to change in our life.
No,
Because
that's
maybe
good.
it always isn't like a full-time thing. Like I've had seasons in my life where I've felt really called to stop listening to podcasts
Sure.
because I realized I was just living from like conviction to conviction to, because and
Yep.
I was never having my own thoughts.
Yep, you're
Just had
just
all these podcasts though.
listening to
I would
other
have
people.
conversations with other people and I'm like, I think I just only talked about what other people said on a
Yep,
podcast and didn't share any of like what I was
been
thinking.
there.
And so for a season I felt convicted to give that up. But now I feel much more balanced with podcasts.
Yeah.
I don't feel like it's ruining my relationship with the Lord or
And it's
maybe
healthy. It's
with
healthy
other people. I don't
seasonal.
know. But yeah, it's
Here's the
just
part where I
like
say, Katie, you only talk about podcasts.
Yeah, so it's just like pay attention to like what stirs in your heart and let that stirring like actually spur you to something, to a change. And know like it doesn't always have to be this radical change. I think we do radical changes in Lent,
Yep.
but it should be through our whole Christian walk. We should
Yep.
be having little changes in our
Yeah.
life.
That's a really good, yeah. It's a really good word. I really like how you practically applied that too, because yeah, I don't know. It's like what is a little fox? What is that? And it's like, okay, it's the little, and truly that's such a relatable thought. It's like, well, this is not a mortal sin. This isn't even a sin yet. This is just a pre-sin. This is a near occasion of sin. This is where I might, like, but truly it's like scrolling on your phone. I might argue it's not really a sin, but like, man, that's a little fox and it is growing fast. And that little fox is gonna be a big fox that bites you, and it's gonna be too fast for you to go catch because you're gonna be totally addicted. And then suddenly, like, But seriously.
And then you're like, now I have to completely give this up when
Right.
I could have just like cut back
Moderated it.
at
Yep.
the beginning.
Yep. And I just love that he says us or whoever's speaking.
Yeah.
Let us catch it together. It's not that
Yes.
like go get those foxes in order, Monica, and come back here tomorrow. It's like, oh yes, Lord. Like
Yeah.
we're gonna hunt together because like Lent is not a time. I know I say this to myself mostly when I talk about this, but like Lent is not primarily a season to mortify our flesh in punishment of ourselves to perfect ourselves for God. It is a season of getting ready as bride to become bridegroom, to become bride, to, not to become bridegroom, to get married. Like, if you phrase it that way, it's like, oh, we together are invested in our
Wow.
vineyard. That's why I'm doing this. I'm not doing this because I'm horrible. I'm a worm,
Yeah.
which, okay, Francis Assisi, I don't really want to argue anything you say. So, like,
I know
maybe
it's
I
hard.
am,
It's hard.
but like, but that is not how the bridegroom wants me to speak to myself or speaks to me. He speaks love to me and he says, I also acknowledge that you have foxes in your vineyard, Monica. Let's fight them together, you know? So
Yeah.
I do. I think that I could really go on my one verse. Like you talked about the Protestant thing, you're just listening again and again to the same verse. I'm like, this would be my one verse you could
One
just stick
verse
on
for a
forever.
year. Yeah, I do love how you say us, because I think that reframes Lent of like what we're doing for Lent, we're doing with Jesus.
Yeah. It's not
It
performance.
it's not performance.
Yeah, and
It's
it's not
not me
alone.
doing this for God.
Yeah.
It's God saying, let's do this together
Yeah.
so then we can have more intimacy
Yeah.
together.
Totally. Exactly. It's going out into the desert with him. Yeah,
Yeah.
he's already gone out in the desert by himself. He does not need you to be alone. Like that's probably
Yes.
what the devil is trying to get you to do. It's like, "Oh, cool, Lent is coming. Be alone."
Be
Like you're like, "No, that's totally not the point of this."
Yeah.
Like, yeah, even like, I've heard of this practice and I like it actually. I think I adopt it this year of like you don't share what you're specifically giving up for Lent, but you're not doing that to be like, oh, I'm just alone in it. You're doing that because it's an intimate thing between you and the Lord that you're catching this fox, and the whole world doesn't need to know that this is your fox you're catching with him, you know?
Yeah.
But it's not about performance or being like, I'm the toughest one, you know? Or like,
Yes.
it's not about nobody can know because it's a secret, you know? It's because it's a secret for you and the Lord. Like, it's not, yeah, it's not freedom from, it's freedom for.
Yeah.
Anyways.
That's awesome.
Okay, verse 16 is also a zinger. My lover belongs to me and I to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it reminds me of you shall be my people, I shall be your God,
Yes.
my
The covenant
beloved. Yep.
union of like the whole Bible is getting us
Yep.
to.
Yep. Yeah, the bride says this
Yes.
and yeah, it just it's like the secret place. It's like the place where I
Yeah.
am yours and you are mine. And honestly, it's one of those things too where I'm like, these words mean so much that I'm almost afraid to say them because I
That's what I
don't
was
want to
about to
say them.
say.
Yeah, is
It's
that
almost like
right?
provocative of
Yeah.
like, I can't say that about God.
Right.
I can't say God belongs to me. Like, that's what
Right.
she's saying. She's saying God belongs to me.
Yeah. And I'm like,
It's
wait a
still
second. And
hard.
then I
It's
go sin.
hard.
Like, how dare I?
Yes.
But this is, yeah, she claims it. I don't know.
Yes. Yeah, so it's
Yeah.
something to wrestle with. And then the last part, we're gonna get into this in the next chapter, but it's like this is something that I wrestle with a lot with this song is it says, until the day grows cold and the shadows flee, roam my lover, which another translation of it is return my lover. So it
Yep.
means that he is now gone
Yep.
again.
Disappeared.
Oh, I don't know. It's just like, what do you, why does God do this? Why does he just like, we were here and now we're not?
Yeah, my beloved belongs to me. Where did he go? He's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it reminds me of someone who used to say, it's not I who leave prayer, it's God who leaves prayer. He's like, I'm not gonna leave prayer till God leaves prayer. And I like didn't, I feel like I still don't fully understand what that means, but I'm like, I feel like what he's saying is this verse.
Yeah,
It's like
right.
God left the prayer.
Which is very provocative in its own way because God doesn't
Yes.
leave.
Because he doesn't actually
But
leave.
then here's the bridegroom, he gone.
Yeah.
So he does and I don't know, we've all had that experience of feeling like the withdraw where you're like
Yes.
he was here. I felt him and now I don't feel him.
Yeah.
So whatever part of God that is that we felt, it's not that God is gone from us completely because we're temples of the Holy Spirit. He's with us, you know, state of grace. But like the feeling, the access that we feel to him, it's like he's
Yeah.
withdrawn. He's pulled back.
Yes.
Yeah.
So maybe that's more of what she's like hitting it
on
is like, I don't know where you are. And that is a very human experience of like, where'd you go?
Yeah, I mean, but to me, until the day grows cool and the shadows flee, roam, my lover, or return, that sounds like she trusts him.
That's
Other
good.
parts, it sounds like she's like, where'd he go? But here she's
Yeah.
like, roam, roam around. I know you'll return to
I know you'll
me.
return.
She's like, be free because
Yeah.
you're my husband, you know? So,
Which kind of talks, like, goes back, I think, to the confidence that she had in saying, my lover belongs to me.
yeah.
Like, when you're that confident with this, like, my bridegroom belongs to me, I
Yeah.
belong to him. And
Yeah.
it's like, okay.
I trust him. I know that wherever he is, he's mine.
Yes. And maybe she's like, whenever I call him back, maybe that
He'll
is where
come
she's at right
back.
now. She's like, if I call him back, he's gonna come back.
Yeah, wow.
Because when she fell asleep earlier in this chapter, she woke up and was like, oh, he's right here.
Right, he's coming. Right,
He's
right, right,
coming.
right. Yeah, so maybe she's just got this confidence of like a young bride. She's like, I don't know. I remember feeling very relieved to have the wedding rings on my hands. I'm like, we are married.
Yes.
You are not going anywhere. Ha
Yes.
ha! Like, roam, Luke, because you will be back. Because you belong
You will be
to
back every night.
me. Exactly. Oh my goodness. Okay, so that's the end of chapter two.
That's the
Woohoo! All right. Well, friends, we hope you've been enjoying walking with us. We have been enjoying pulling this. And yet again, I know we've said it before, we'll probably say it again, but we are doing this to study. But there comes a point in a relationship with Jesus the bridegroom in which you turn off the studying and you just sit with him. So if anything stuck out from this as a word that was like, oh, this kind of hit my heart, we would just invite you to go there first and sit with Jesus the bridegroom. It's not about knowing all the details of this song. It's about falling more in love with Jesus. And
Yeah.
that's what we hope you do this Lent. All right, we'll see you next time.
See you next week.
Bye.